This episode is supported by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, being human doesn't come with a user's manual. There's no set of instructions for when things get emotionally difficult or when it feels like everything may fall apart. That's when you need help to understand what's causing difficult emotions and how to cope with them. BetterHelp has connected nearly 3 million clients with licensed therapists. It's convenient, accessible, and entirely online. Visit betterhelp.com/podcastpod to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/podcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your house on a landslide of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I'm 21, the edge is razor thin between being numb and feeling everything.
You know, if you were on TikTok, I mean, I gotta assume if you've made it this far into Popcast, in the lore of Popcast, you're on TikTok. A couple months ago, you might have been, dare I say, besieged by a song that was everywhere and is the song we just played, and it was being covered and there were answer records and there was just a lot of energy around this particular song. And I think it was very revealing. The song is called Complex Demo. It's by Katie Gregson-McLeod, who was, up until that point, a college student who released music, had aspirations of being a professional musician, was doing the occasional gig, posted a snippet of a song that she'd written, a very heart-rending, sad song about how hard it is to let go of someone who maybe doesn't care if you let them go, or maybe needs you to hold on to them even though they don't want to hold on to you. It's incredibly astutely written. It's sharp, it's affecting, and it's spoke really, really loudly. And I think you could see that in all the kind of like second and third tier videos about that song. And to me, it really felt like part of a larger narrative on TikTok over the last, let's say, 9 months. But really, if we're going to go back, it's always been in play over the last couple of years about, frankly put, sad girl singer-songwriters who are making immediate heartbreak music. And it is getting a tremendous amount of traffic and a tremendous amount of attention. And this has been something that has occurred over and over again on TikTok in the last couple of years. And I think low key, you can sort of trace some of the power and potency of this narrative on the app to the original driver's license, Olivia Rodrigo TikTok, which is where that song first started to generate real fervor. And I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time. And I think Katie's song is a good opportunity to kind of jump in and really try to tell the big picture narrative. When I wanted to do that, I knew who I had to call. Rachel Brodsky is here. Rachel, welcome to Popcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Rachel is a staff editor at Stereo Gum, crucially writes the recurring pop column. Also, shout out Chris DeVille, the prior writer of the pop column. But you stay on top of this. You stay in the TikTok weeds like me. And maybe this is a dark thing for us to both admit, but you know, here we are. We've developed a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of expertise about it. So let's get into it. Let's start in the present, though. When you were watching what was happening with Complex, the Katie Gregson-McLeod song, what struck you about it as being perhaps very apt and familiar as far as how it was being embraced, or perhaps neither apt nor familiar? Where did it land for you?
Well, I mean, the first thing I thought was like just her vocal sounded instantly familiar to me. That song is very ballady. It sounds a lot like Adele, who is in many ways a very recent huge influence for, I think, a lot of the, if you will, sad girl singer-songwriters on TikTok. And then there's also kind of like an indie DIY stripped down element, which made me think like of Lucy Dacus. So she feels very familiar. And if you're talking about the sad girl TikTok movement, I think the number one thing fans look for, and you hear this all the time, it's like I listen to so many podcasts now that talk about like, how does someone break out on TikTok and what's the magic formula? And I think people always, the industry likes to come back to, well, does it seem organic? It doesn't seem like instantly relatable. And so I just, by watching the, like, I was actually watching Katie Gregson-McLeod's YouTube which I probably should have delved further into her TikTok, but that's just how many outlets and platforms there are today. But I definitely like saw that stripped down, intimate quality. You feel like you're in the room there with her, listening to her. A lot of these artists will like crowdsource the material in segments. So they'll sing a verse or a chorus of something they've been working on and like kind of see the reaction. And then if it hits, then they'll complete the song. And it's their kind of like, the fans feel like they're in the studio with their favorite. And it's just more in real time.
One thing, and when I interviewed Katie, we talked a little bit about why TikTok is maybe particularly well suited as an app to this kind of gut punch intimacy. And, you know, it's funny, if we were going to have a TikTok conversation circa 2019 or pre-COVID, really what we were talking about was dance music and hip hop and challenges and ways of optimizing the visual interface of the app to generate attention and virality. This is a different thing altogether. This is an attempt to trigger a much more core emotional position. And one of the things Katie said is basically everybody's going through a version of this. And so it's not surprising that a song that speaks to this kind of like universal young heartbreak experience is going to hit people in this very private space. Like, I feel like my TikTok, it's very private. It is tailored for me. It does feel like it's tailored for me. And I imagine if you are in the demographic of people who are going through it, and then you come across a song like this, it's obviously going to hit much harder because of the specific intimacy of how this app functions.
I'm like a lot of older millennials who got into TikTok over the course of the pandemic. And now I watch it every day. And like, I love TikTok. I've started making them very recently.
Do you want to plug your page?
Not especially. You can find me. I've only made, because I'm still very amateur, but I only really make them because I feel like I want to talk about things that I feel like I want to hear talked about the same way that I write. But anyway, if you have my name, you can Google me and you can find. But my point is that I've always thought it's really funny how, like, if you haven't been on TikTok, I hear a lot, and you probably do too, oh, what's that, like the dancing app? People just dance. But like, on the flip side, you see so many people, whether they're creating music or not, telling these deeply intimate stories. This is something that horrible that happened to me, or this is something great that happened to me. And it's a storytelling app.
The current meme with the super freak audio and people telling absurd or hurtful or intimate story. I mean, yes. I this is my job, but also I have a job. So it's like, it's hard for me to watch 2.5 minute narrative stories, 10 in a row. You know, it's a little bit tough. I try to give them 30 seconds each.
The best super freak stories are the ones that like stay on the beat and get to the point super quick.
Yes.
Otherwise, I'm not going to make it.
Correct.
I know what you're talking about. But it's like, there are these different meme formats of the way people get like really, really hyper personal on this app. And then that can create a flood of commenters or people duetting or stitching to tell their own stories. And if you're addicted to storytelling, I'm pretty addicted to storytelling, then it's really hard to not engage with. It's just, it's entertaining, it's interesting, it's personal, you learn a lot. And I think that singer-songwriters creating in this way, it's just a natural evolution.
There's a little bit of a informal cabal of content creators, singers, who do this kind of work. And then when someone new comes along, that's actually where the initial excitement comes. It's like when someone who's been doing it a long time duets it with like a look of wonder or astonishment, or covers it or sings along or sings in harmony. It's a little bit of a like welcome to the tribe energy. And I feel like it's watching that Katie moment. I was like, ah, she's being absorbed. All the singers are like coming out and putting their arms around her and be like, you're with us now. You know, it had that energy.
So I was writing notes before we got on this call. And one of the notes I wrote was like, there's this community support element here. It's, it feels like a support group, but less awkward. I don't know. But there's like a safety, I almost feel like, behind the camera in your home. And a lot of the singer-songwriters that I've seen on TikTok in this realm, like, they talk very openly about mental health and social anxiety. And I feel like there's like a safety element to communicating in this way.
Actually, I think that's totally spot on. And I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but that we're dealing with an app that fosters that kind of conversation. We're dealing with a pre-existing ecosystem of creators who are already orienting a certain kind of viewer to think in these terms. So maybe it's only natural that if that exists already, then the soundtrack of it, the unofficial soundtrack of it, is going to actually do numbers, basically.
And there's also, on the flip side, a certain bravery in pouring your heart out in this way. Because, I mean, as anyone who creates on the internet, doesn't even have to be on TikTok, knows, when you put yourself out there, you risk getting a lot of naysayers, haters, bullying. So it's not always going to be a positive thing. You don't know for sure when you put something. So I think there's like a brave element of putting yourself out there like that. But then at the same time, if you are under a certain age, say you're under 20, you've grown up this way.
Yeah, you don't think of it as brave, I don't think.
I agree. Yeah, I think it's just your natural state.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the history of this arc. This musical arc, right? Should we just go to the Olivia Rodrigo moment? Because I do think it really does set the table for a lot of the people that we want to talk about today.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the OG TikTok of Driver's License, which is just Driver's License. So, but the short version. So that original TikTok, and I want to be honest and say I'm not 100% clear about this. I think Olivia's cleaned up her TikTok in the 2 years since. The version that is extant is like very professional. It's like, I am Olivia Rodrigo. I have a new song that's out today. It's Day Of. There is also a piano version, which has a slightly different melodic line, that I think predates that. Not 100% sure if there's what's a Rodrigo stan called?
I don't know that. She has a stand name.
Okay. Well, if you're a Rodrigo stand, number one, come up with a stand name. Number two, tell me when this piano thing came out, because the original one is not on her TikTok anymore. Or I don't think it is, at least. That, to me, and the immediate success. I mean, we got to remember the extraordinarily parched pop music energy of January 2021, right? Parched. And I think, obviously, did what it did for her career and in the industry more broadly, but I think really also set a bunch of fires in young singer-songwriter types on TikTok. What do you make of that?
Well, first off, Driver's License, there's this lore behind it. It's meant to be a
big
true
lore.
Story.
Big yeah. lore.
If fans of Olivia's had been following her earlier work, I think she came from the Disney Channel machine, and she had been dating someone publicly. He was also a star co-starring with her. And then they break up, I suppose. And so this song has big Taylor Swift energy in a way that you can kind of trace who it could be about. And then there's just a lot of discussion, I think, around that and like this tabloid sense. But it also, I think, makes listeners feel like, oh, I really know this person. It kind of enhances that parasocial relationship feeling. I think just the massive success that Driver's License in particular had on TikTok definitely inspired, but like also the timing, if you think about it, January 2020 is like 2 months before the first rush of the pandemic and lockdown in particular in the United States. I'm thinking of this as specifically to like Western countries. And suddenly you have all these people at home. I said earlier, that's when I started watching TikTok. In the last year or so, like I've interviewed a lot of young artists who like their careers had to essentially be on hold. Like they couldn't go out tour. They couldn't go do like writing. I don't think Zoom writing sessions were
no,
really
not
too
not
big yet.
Yet.
Like these are all things that happened out of necessity because of social distancing. So this is offering them a way to have control. They don't need to be working with anybody in like the larger laddered up music industry in order to share and distribute their songs. And this is a way to like have and build that community we were talking about earlier. So I think that the combination of the massive success from Olivia Rodrigo's Driver's License and then kind of moving into this period of time where everyone has to stay home and put their careers on hold probably had this cumulative effect where you have these, you know, singer-songwriters writing incredibly confessional.
Right. Their peak vulnerability, peak intimacy, peak in the houseness.
Exactly. And even today, you still see a lot of these singer-songwriters putting music out, like either in their cars or in their bathrooms or in their bed, literally in their bedrooms. I mean, bedroom pop was a term even well before the pandemic, but we all became used to seeing people's interiors of their homes. And we grew to, I think, expect that. And then that adds this layer of intimacy to the proceedings and it kind of builds on that organic thing you want when you're a creator. You want someone to feel like they're there with you. And also what you said earlier about people are feeling vulnerable. People are feeling depressed. I mean, there's a lot of awful stuff that creators, I think Olivia Rodrigo's age and her acolytes who follow her, a lot of them are barely 20 years old. They've only ever known a Great Recession and like a housing crisis, and they have a climate crisis and political upheaval. And there's
so really, what we're, our whole thing today, it's about climate change. That's what it comes to.
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, all of these things, and then you throw in a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, and people are not in a good place mentally, and where are they going to go?
It is interesting to see the conversation, because obviously when something like that happens, all you see in the Hits Daily Doubles of the world and the Billboards of the world is, who's the next one? And I'm sure, you know, A&Rs and independent scouts just going into the deep weeds of SoundCloud and YouTube and TikTok performers with only 3,000 followers to figure it out, to try to identify it and amplify it. And there are a couple people I want to talk about in that lane, but who I think ended up with very different trajectories. And the two people I'm specifically thinking about are Lauren Spencer Smith and M. Behold.
I think M. Behold is a really just fascinating, like I'm picturing if Olivia Rodrigo is like the river, I picture M. Behold as this tributary because their sounds are not that similar. M's music is, it's peppy. It's almost got kind of a theater kid quality. It's nothing against theater kids.
You could say.
It sounds a bit like Regina Spektor meets Sara Bareilles, but one of her earlier songs, Groundhog Day, basically about how she's 22 and having kind of an existential crisis about when she's going to move out of her parents' house. And her friends from high school are starting to get married and have kids. And then meanwhile, here M is, and she doesn't have a car. She couldn't even leave if she wanted to because she doesn't, you know, have wheels. And I immediately personally related to that, given my own experience right out of college, right into the Great Recession and so on and so forth. And she writes a lot about mental health. And actually, she just released a song that I'm newly obsessed with, that she's describing how she's not the cool girl. I think it's called Too Precious. She's describing how a partner is talking to her about how she's not chill enough. She's not like, why can't you be like these other girls?
RIP to that partner. Jeez.
But these are some niche experiences, and she's like, I don't want to stay out late. I just want to be at home. It's like hardcore introvert energy.
Big Alessia Cara energy.
Yeah. And these are things that you don't often hear, that I personally haven't heard sung too much about in this way.
We should listen to Numb Little Bug, which is the breakout, as it were, you know, was on the Billboard, like kind of in the top 20, maybe for a little bit. Dare I say, maybe the biggest song to come out of this scene, not by Olivia Rodrigo, like on a chart level. Is that safe to say?
I'd say so.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm wrong, someone send me an email or a message. But like, I'm pretty sure on a pure chart level, this is the biggest one to come out of this ecosystem. So this is Numb Little Bug and Behold. The prescription's on its way. We'll be right back. With a name I can't pronounce and the dose I gotta take. Boy, I wish that I could count. Cause I just wanna see if this could make me happy. Do you ever get a little bit tired of life? Like you're not really happy, but you don't wanna die. Like you're hanging by a thread, but you gotta survive. Cause you gotta survive. Like your body's in the room.
I'm Kevin Roos.
And I'm Casey Newton.
We're technology reporters and the hosts of Hard Fork, a new show from the New York Times.
A hard fork is a programming term for when you're building something, but it gets really screwed up. So you take the entire thing, break it, and start over.
And that's a little bit what it feels like right now in the tech industry. Like these companies that you and I have been writing about for the past decade, they're all kind of struggling to stay relevant.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the energy and money in Silicon Valley is shifting to totally new ideas. Crypto, the metaverse, AI. It feels like a real turning point.
And all this is happening so fast. Some of it's so strange. I just feel like I'm texting you constantly. Like, what is this story? Explain this to me.
And so we're going to talk about these stories. We're going to bring in other journalists, newsmakers, whoever else is involved in building this future to explain to us what's changing and why it all matters.
Hard Fork from the New York Times.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back with Rachel Brodsky. We were listening a minute ago to Numb Little Bug by And Behold. Rachel, speaking of intimate niche experiences, is maybe about antidepressants is sort of how it's been pitched.
It's basically her describing any mental health struggles that she's had. She's someone who is possibly sought therapy and now trying to medicate, but it's like the downsides of what she's taking kind of make the highs much less high and the lows much less low. And so when life is occurring for her, it's like she feels like she can't really feel anything. And I think a lot of people can relate to that if anyone has been through the drug train. And it's nice. It's like, I realize she's not speaking to another person or another woman, but I feel like these songs are like passing the Bechdel test.
Yeah, they're all implicit, but that's an interesting way to frame it. To me, they're all implicitly speaking to other young women. And I think the nature of the interface on the app, like talking to Katie about, I posted a song for like 100 people and I woke up and like my life had changed. I do think a lot of times with the stuff that goes quote unquote surprisingly viral, the reason that the virality is a surprise is because the original post is posted without intent, or rather it's posted without intent bigger than communicating to a small circle of people. And the trick of the app is making me and you, John and Rachel, think that we are part of the small group of people for which the thing was intended. But often, most often, I would say, we are very emphatically not. But I do think the best songs that come out of this space have that air of, this is just for my friends. Like, this is just for the crew.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I think the perceived lack of that is why an artist like Leah Kate has gotten some pushback. I wrote a column on Leah Kate, who takes after the more pop punk side of what Olivia Rodrigo was doing on Sour. She's kind of more in line with the like Gales of the world. You know,
that's the t-shirt from this episode. The Gales of the world. Yeah.
And she put out a song.
I'm sorry. All I'm thinking is like, A, B, C, D, E, F, U, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, Popcast. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. I just had to get that out of my system. Forgive me.
Well, one of the songs that she put out early that people really did like was 10 Things I Hate About You, which Gail and Leah Kate both kind of utilized like numericals on the alphabet to get their points across. But a more recent song that I think she received lots of pushback was called Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Bitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's play it. Just because, like, if you've heard it, it's stuck in your brain in maybe not a great way. If you haven't heard it, well, you're welcome. Here you go. Diamond. Twinkle, twinkle, little bitch. Just this song and the Gale, A, B, C, D, E, F, whatever the actual name of it is. I don't believe that industry plant is a real thing, but these both have the sort of, oh, duh, I'm going to engineer virality. They seem to go hand in hand with the Halsey Instagram, like, my label wants me to post TikToks. Can you believe it? It's like, these are the flip side. It's like Halsey's watching the Twinkle Twinkle Little Bitch TikTok and being like, you want me to do this?
I don't think that anybody wants anybody to do a Twinkle Twinkle Little Bitch.
Wow, savage.
But I mean, you're right. Gale caught some pushback too, because people thought that her writing A, B, C, D, E, F, U was an actual like industry plant thing, where someone, an Atlantic industry person, was like in her comments saying, hey, write this song using the alphabet, seemingly as an answer to like, hey, what should I write a song about? But Twinkle Twinkle Little Bitch itself, I'm not sure anyone asked for it. I don't know. I don't want to go into the like who was sitting around the conference room table when this song was ideated, but people can smell what they think is inauthentic. And the Twinkle Twinkle Little Bitch sounded inauthentic in its Mad Lib like patchwork together. Then on the flip side, when you get like an MB Hold or like a Lauren Spencer Smith, before we hopped on this call, I was looking at a song that hasn't come out yet by Lauren Spencer Smith, but it's about to, and it's called 28, and it's got verses that describe like a conversation, I believe, that she's having with her father, and her parents divorced when she was much younger. I think her father is describing like, hey, I met this new woman and she's 30, but the lyrics say that she's actually 28, this woman, and not that much older than Lauren. And Lauren is like singing about this super niche thing in a song, but that like tons of people could relate to.
I want to dive in on Lauren Spencer Smith, but before we close out the Gale talk, I have two things. One, I think the song is good. It's a good song. The other thing I want to say, if there's anybody out there who is anxious or frustrated about the alleged label involvement in the creation of the TikTok that was meant to appear as an act of spontaneous creativity, but was in fact a completely plotted act of marketing rollout. Number one, everything you love is that, pretty much. Sorry, hate to break it to you. Basically, everything you love is that. Number two, hip hop freestyles on the radio are not freestyled. So here we are. Like, let's just be at peace with the fact that there is spontaneous creativity in the world, but the way that that is presented and rendered in visual and digital media is not always a one-to-one correlation with the actual act of creation. That said, let's listen to just a tiny bit of A, B, C, D, E, F, U by Gale. Okay, now we're back to Lauren Spencer Smith. In the like 6 to 12 months after Driver's License, I think Narcissist got some traction. I hope I have the timeline right, but I think Narcissist is the Lauren Spencer Smith song that really starts to get some traction. Lauren Spencer Smith has a real boomer of a voice, really, really acute songwriting, clearly accessing a depth of feeling, maybe just like a touch of theatricality, maybe like a little like overtouch of theatricality in the presentation. But it seemed very obviously like lining up to receive, if there was a torch, to receive the torch. Talk to me a little bit about her arc over the course of the last 6 to 9 months.
I think that fingers crossed also, Spencer Smith's fingers crossed really, really took off within the last year. And a lot of that is thanks to its virality on TikTok. She definitely gets compared to Olivia Rodrigo quite a bit. It's funny because even her 2019 album, Unplugged Volume 1, was a Juno Award nominee. And she lost to Bryan Adams. So
who among us has not lost a Juno? Who hasn't lost a Juno to Bryan Adams? First of all, shout out all my Canadian listeners. I know there's a few of you. Did y'all stand up in revolt when Bryan Adams won the Juno in 2019, like, were people marching in the streets? Were people out there protesting and saying, you robbed Lauren Spencer Smith? Like, what did you do to stop the reign of terror of Bryan Adams over the Juno Awards? I just want to know. Send me a message, drop me an email, let me know what you did to contribute to the cause. Anyway, please continue.
Well, she was on, I think, the 18th season of American Idol.
Yes.
And she placed in the top 20.
Also, who among us, to be fair, who among us?
It's easy to forget that she was on American Idol. And I think that it speaks a lot to the way TikTok has replaced a platform that the talent shows used to have a bit more power. I can't name the last American Idol winner, to be honest.
No, nor can I. And I am a person who literally blogged American Idol weekly in the mid-2000s. Shout out to my blogging partner, Sean Fennessy. Shout out to Karen, who, as longtime listeners of the podcast know, is a major Idol head. But we both struggle because Idol has basically become kind of like essentially a contest for Southern regional pop country singers and the occasional complete outlier who is not going to have an actual pop career. I saw someone who I believe I had originally seen on American Idol, maybe it was on The Voice, I think it was on American Idol, recently performing with Parliament Funkadelic. That's a real thing that happened, like as part of the road show, which maybe that's better than whatever that person was doing previously. But American Idol, yeah, it is, and frankly, has always been, a television show, not an actual act of artist creation.
It's really for the best that you can't really attribute Lauren Spencer Smith's virality to American Idol, because a lot of the time what happens now is artists like her will like build millions of followers just themselves. You hear a lot today about personal branding and building your own audience, like from the grassroots, or at least that's how they want it to look. And then after they've built this major following themselves, then that's when the major label system will like descend. And it gives artists, I think, a sense that artist hopefuls that if they just find the right audience, if they brand themselves a certain way, if they put themselves out there, then like, you never know, it could be you. Like, I think I compared it to the lottery on Stereo, though.
Oh, it definitely does feel like the lottery. I'm glad you brought up the American Idol thing with Lauren Spencer Smith, because I think that is another point of overlap with Olivia. Look, obviously, Olivia's platform as a Disney star was much bigger, but it also is important to remember that part of the reason that Olivia was able to get as much traction as she got, and in fact, to have a deal with a label that could support the fast growth that she ended up having, is because she had a pre-existing audience. And I'm sure in part, Lauren Spencer Smith, having had a pre-existing audience and also some familiarity with being a performer, that helps. When something pops off, you have a person who has been training for that. That matters. I'm also interested in, you know, we started with Katie, who maybe comes at it from a slightly less practiced place, but I feel like we have to talk about Sadie Jean and What Are You Doing Now? The duet of late 21, early 22.
Went viral in 2021.
Oh, geez. Were we ever so young? We're going to throw it to fate. I believe on YouTube, there is a mega mix of all the duets of What Are You Doing Now? Let's just Pedro's just going to pick one. We're going to like throw a dart at the 9-minute video and whatever comes up, comes up. This is a TBD duet or duets of Sadie Jean, What Are You Doing Now?
I want to talk to you, but I don't think there's nothing to say. You told me I should wait, but now you drifting away. You got that I feel out of love kind of look on your face. You told me to stop trying, but then hate when I'm late. But you know that I just never could be mad at you. And when I talk, sometimes I'm speaking with an attitude. My pettiness is me trying not to get back with you. You bad for me, and it's unfair that I'm not bad for you.
Now, obviously, when this came out, the big peak moment is when Lil Yachty duets it, right? Like, that's the kind of like, oh, this is real. This is really happening, and this is major, and this is going to really have some traction. But as important, or frankly, as good as that duet was, there are like 20 others that I thought were really good. When I wrote a notebook about it, I probably listened to like 50 of them. And it felt to me, I mean, that was in a moment where there were a lot of duet challenges, but this is the one that really felt emblematic and also kind of like the great Posse Cut remix of late 2021, except it was a sad song about trying to get back in touch with an ex. Tell me a little bit about this era. We're already talking. It's literally was 10 months ago. 10 months ago.
The micro trends make everything feel time is both longer and shorter. Well, what's interesting to me about Sadie is that she still feels like such a new artist, given that What Are You Doing Now is, well, it's a year old at this point. But if you go to her Spotify, there's not a whole lot else there. She, according to Wikipedia, is currently a student at NYU. She goes to
the Clive Davis program. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I imagine if you're splitting your time that way, then perhaps her output will be more down the line. But she was not on an American Idol or any other talent show. Her beginnings feel more DIY. She started taking piano as a kid and vocal lessons, started writing songs also as a kid, doing just normal kid things as opposed to getting into like audition rooms and stuff that you do when you like live in Hollywood. But according to Wikipedia, she was initially encouraged to put her music out there by her brother when he heard her perform a cover of Radiohead's Creep. And then she started uploading her music to SoundCloud. As recently as last year, like it's October now, 2022. Well, in October 2021, that's when she wrote What Are You Doing Now with her classmate, or two classmates, it looks like, and then post a snippet of the song to TikTok the next day. That's kind of where it takes off after she does that and then posts an open verse challenge for What Are You Doing Now. So she's like inviting people to engage with her. I think that can really help when you make it more interactive. But what's interesting about her is that it feels much more like, when you use the word organic, Sadie Jean's rise feels more DIY, and that she's just like using friends, family, internet, as opposed to having appeared on like an American Idol or The Voice or something. So it feels like her audience was generated just by word of mouth.
And participation. I mean, this is, again, going back to the Katie thing, that song works because other people, I assume many of them young women, but certainly even old people like me, watched the video, heard the song, and connected to something very direct in it. And the way, obviously, the app functions, and Sadie, by making it an open verse challenge, only amplified that and said, I want to hear your story. I just told you my story. I want to hear yours. How can you write a story that interacts with, plays with this? And it's almost like a Discord. It's like private chats that just happen to take place in public, and people like me and you happen to be able to spy in on them.
We haven't really talked yet about like Instagram lives and going live on TikTok. And I think that's also part of it. A lot of these creators will lean into the engagement part of what you're saying.
Live broadcasting is terrorism. Sorry.
I don't personally engage very much with it, but I know that that's just a way for artists who are starting out in this way to, it's just one method to get your fans engaged with what you're doing and to feel like they have a voice. And I love seeing artists like Sadie and Lauren Spencer Smith just like replying, like in the replies, like they're in the comments too. They don't just put something out there and let the comments pile up. Like they're actively engaging. And yeah, you have those verse challenges that we were just talking about, which is interesting because I really hadn't heard too much about like a verse challenge. Like you usually just hear about dance challenges.
I feel like other people had been doing them. I see like a lot of like hip hop verse challenges, whether it's one rapper to the next, or a lot of times producers saying, what do you have for this beat? That kind of stuff. So I was seeing that, and I kind of assumed that's where she picked up the thread from. And one of the things that was actually really fascinating about who picked up the challenge from Sadie is you had country singers, pop singers, rappers, R&B singers, people who merge genres, people from all different backgrounds, all different parts of the country. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name. Azay1K, who is from Florida, who I think low-key got a record deal off of his response to Sadie's open verse challenge. I was like messaging with a manager, maybe either him or his manager at some point after that, And they were like going to LA and maybe signed a deal like not that long after that. And this was a person who just fired off a 16 real fast to that.
It could be you. You never know.
No one cared about my duet. No, you know, like, no, I didn't get a record deal. Yes, it could be me. That's correct.
Well, I meant more the universal you, like, but it could be you, John.
Oof. There were a number of people who are like functioning in this space. You had aggregated a really big list. I added a few things to the list. It's just, I feel like I've been keeping a running list of this. But one thing you brought up in an earlier conversation was talking about, forget about sad girls. Let's talk about sad boys. And we got to talk about Joji.
Joji is probably someone who I've been the most fascinated by just in terms of his trajectory. I mean, talk about people with built-in audiences. I've never seen a pop musician try to distance themselves from their, not necessarily his previous audience, but from his previous persona, as much as I've seen that in Joji. So Joji is, I don't know if he'd still call himself a comedian, but he built his whole brand on YouTube. I think he's who we have to thank for, was it the Harlem Shake? If you go back to his earlier videos as Filthy Frank.
I'd rather not.
Which I don't blame you, but yeah, there's some problematic stuff there. Where
God has a bigger plan for me, Rachel, than doing that.
He does like some like vocal imitations of different people from different countries and their accents. Not great. Don't blame him for trying to distance himself from that persona because definitely does not hold up 10 years later. But today he performs under the name Joji and
signed to 88 Rising, which is the Asian and Asian American hip hop, R&B and pop label that also has Rich Brian, who also used to have a not a good moniker that was also quasi-racist.
His tone, his mood as Joji it's very slowed down. It's a bit minimalist, a lot of focus on his vocal. And when I wrote about him for the pop column, I think someone in our Stereogum Slack had called him a sad boy. I don't remember. Maybe I read it, but I was like, this guy is like the quintessential sad boy with just sort of him and his piano. And he builds out a bit more. There's some electronic and R&B laddered up into his musicality, but he specializes in like downtempo, kind of melancholic, soulful stuff. It's like a very, very different vibe from talk about a vibe shift. That's like the ultimate vibe shift.
And to be frank, I haven't really liked much Joji music prior to this. I really like Glimpse of Us. I haven't really liked much of the music previously. And also, I can't remember the context in which I saw Joji perform, but I thought it was one of the most dismal, worst live performances that I've seen in recent memory.
Oh, wow.
Certainly one of the worst in the last 3 years. Four years. Yeah.
I have never seen him perform, so I'll take your word for it. But that's surprising given how he's not new at performing in general. He is a performer.
Correct. Yeah, but I guess it is surprising. And maybe he has improved. I am open to seeing Joji again. But like the time that I saw Joji, I was like, this ain't it. We should listen to A Glimpse of Us real fast, or actually, I should say, real slow. So this is Joji, Glimpse of Us, which has been a fairly big hit in recent months.
When you're outside, in my mind, 'cause sometimes I look in her eyes, and that's where I find a glimpse of us.
Do you think that songs made by men traffic similarly or can traffic similarly on the app to a lot of the songs that made by women that we were talking about?
That's a great question. And I think yes, because as I've been reminded in recent months, gender is not real. I'm not trying to be sarcastic when I say that. I just think
no J.K. Rowling here. Like none of that.
No J.K. Rowling. No turf vibes whatsoever.
Nope, not at all.
No, I just think that if we're talking specifically about Gen Z, who are the major consumers of these artists, and this music, I think that gender really doesn't play into anyone's thinking or feeling when they're consuming this music. Plus, gender itself feels much more fluid than it ever has. And the creation of sad people ballads. And I think Conan Gray is a nice example of, I was going to mention him as well. And I wrote a column about him reviewing his most recent album, Super Ache. And I tried to point out that because he shares a producer with Olivia Rodrigo, and I think that the two have written together. And
Dan Nigro.
And Dan Nigro is their shared producer. So I noticed a lot of the songs on Conan Gray's Super Ache had kind of a similar pacing and cadence. I felt like there were a lot of ballads kind of built out in the same way that have a similar sounding like crescendo, and his voice is, he has a higher pitch voice. So I think that he shares many, many, many fans with Olivia Rodrigo, and his name will probably come up if you go to like Spotify, and like you may also like artists. So no, I really don't think that gender plays much into this, but maybe I'm wrong, but that's just kind of how it seems to me. But it is interesting, like when I started researching more names for this discussion, you could go on forever. It's a rabbit hole. There, it's like one name begets 20 more names until they all start to blur together. And then you feel like ancient that you can't, like, you know, really need to like do your homework to make sure that you're not like,
missing
up. Exactly.
Before we wrap up, I do want to wrap up with one of the songs that you had pointed me to. But do you want to just do like a quick roll call of names for people to point to? Because there's a couple that I was interested in and we haven't gotten to.
Yeah.
So let me start. Let's just do literally just roll call style. Lizzie McAlpin.
Are we going to go back and forth when you say roll call?
No, because you have more. So I'll just do mine and then you can do yours.
Okay.
All right. So Lizzie McAlpin, who I mentioned, I think in the Katy piece, go listen to You Ruined 1975. Jensen McRae, who is a really, really talented singer-songwriter. And I sort of was joking in our email, but, you know, I do think Claire Rosencrans is in here somewhere, even if the music is a little bit sunnier than a lot of the other music that we've been talking about. Now your turn.
Okay. Sasha Alex Sloan.
Sasha Alex Sloan. Yes, correct.
Kate McRae. We did not mention Gracie Abrams.
We did not. Olivia Rodrigo tour opener, Gracie Abrams.
J.J. Abrams.
Yes.
Which begets a whole other conversation, a whole other Nepo baby conversation. Just putting that out there. Let's see. We talked a little bit about Jay Maya. Zoe Clark. Ashley Kutcher. Rosie Darling, Haley Joel, and Grace Davies.
Incredible names from the name generator. The last person, and this is on your long list, this is a song I had not heard. I was familiar with the singer, but I was not familiar with the song. And it's an absolute banger, and it should be zooming to radio. So Jenna Rain, the song is called Fumble the Bag. Tell me just a touch about Jenna Rain.
Now, I only just discovered Jenna Rain, so I don't want to misrepresent her by not Googling her first before.
That's just, okay. Just to be... Sometimes you don't have to. Sometimes it's just a vibe.
Her vibe to me is very Taylor Swift-esque, but circa You Belong With Me 2009 Taylor Swift. Fumbled the Bag has the most fun video. Jenna is kind of like playing herself, wearing, I guess you could say, like more bookish attire and like giant round glasses. It's definitely like I'm yearning for someone that I'm not receiving love back from. And I hope that I'm getting this right, because again, I only just discovered.
It's a smash though.
I really just tapped into like the vibe, and like I was like, this girl has been listening to herself to some Taylor Swift, You Belong With Me, because I felt like that was the entire vibe of I'm not being seen, but I want to be seen.
On podcasts, we try to put people up on game. We put them up on hits. We put them up on smashes. We put them up on worldviews and movements. And Rachel, you came today and you put people up on Fumbled the Bag.
Oh, good.
And I appreciate that. That is our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. And if you're not scouring TikTok like myself and Rachel, I guess go download the app. Shout out to the person at Podcast Live who said that they had never been on TikTok before hearing about it on Popcast, downloaded it, and then a year later got a job at TikTok. How about that?
What?
How about that for action? Anyway, shout out that person. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio content. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Get on the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/popcastfacebook. Get in the Discord, tinyurl.com/popcastdiscord. Email me at popcastnytown.com, especially if you have any question and any answers to the questions that I was asking, because I need answers. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week. And hopefully, in the meantime, none of y'all are out there fumbling the bag.